Hey, everybody, it's Chris from The Droning Company, joined today by, of course, John McBride of The Droning Company. And, John, it's been about 2 weeks since, or two episodes. Last episode we did with Wayne Baker, and you didn't get to participate in that one, but glad to have you back.
Yeah, absolutely. And underneath the shirt, you know, underneath the hair, I do have my Droning Company logo, so it's there.
I like that.
Representing The Droning Company. So, again, you know, these podcasts that we're putting together kind of poking at some of the different things that are happening in the industry really gives us a, you know, a true value to the viewers. And, you know, we apparently have a really good one coming, Chris. What do we got going on here today?
Yeah. So I'm really glad that you're back in the saddle with me this, for this episode. I'm sure Stuart's somewhere smiling right now, knowing you're wearing a Droning Company logo. So anyway, no, I am glad that you're here with us today because we're joined by, Randall from Anzu Robotics. Randall, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, and talking to you boys makes it even better. So thank you for having me. I look forward to the chat.
Yeah, of course. And so, you know, jumping right into it, you know, there's been a lot of buzz in the world of drones, especially relating to some of the legislation that's popping through that will result in or would result in the banishment of DJI technology on American soil. It has a lot of people up in arms because a lot of people have sort of built their businesses, their programs, their organizations on the backs of these very affordable, very efficient drones. That's sort of where Anzu has really capitalized on some opportunity here. And it's a unique solution. So I sort of want to give you the opportunity, Randall, to introduce Anzu to people that haven't heard about it yet, and maybe give some insight on to people that have.
For sure. So I'll say that in 2 weeks from today is my 10-year anniversary in the drone space. And during that 10 years, I've been in some places that have been, you know, high traffic, high communication opportunities with end users from the time at DJI, my time at FLIR, briefly doing the Autel thing. Their vantage points of the drone users and their pain points that you don't see unless you're part of a manufacturer to the same degree. Resellers often see it as well. And I've been in that space for a number of years as well. It is not, to me, a surprise that we slowly started seeing steps into legislation that would prohibit the use of DJI and other Chinese manufactured drones. Not because I think that it's warranted, but because I think that there has been this concern that has not been quelled by the voices of DJI specifically from the top, where they have not come back and pushed against accusations, but basically taken a line of allowing people to say what they want to say and make the assumptions that they want to make and basically refute them by saying nothing or giving them no attention. I think that that has led to a significant component of this whole thing is that there is not a voice of Frank Wong of DJI speaking on behalf of his company, and it would maybe be too late now. But 14 months ago, a concept came up of how do we continue to try to serve the U.S. market and those that might be precluded from using DJI drones around the world, and, you know, take IP or take technology that already exists and find a way to manufacture in a way that could be long-term sustainable. So Anzu Robotics is now a little over 6 weeks old as a company being announced. But during that 14 months, we basically took a licensing agreement with DJI for enterprise products and started with two. Basically, the Raptor and Raptor T are based on the Mavic 3 Enterprise and Mavic 3 Thermal. And we manufacture them in Malaysia. We do some things on the software side with our partners Aloft to make sure that data is pointing not to DJI servers, not to servers in China or anywhere else, but AWS servers that are housed by Aloft. And basically just take that first step into, well, what if you took this affordable, really high quality, highly tested in the millions, you know, over 10 years of hundreds of millions of dollars of R&D, and you take that technology and you make it so that these country of origin concerns can be smoothed out. I can't say that we've done everything for everyone, and I can't say that this is our final state 6 weeks into this company, but I think that what we've done is taken a step, asked the questions, what if we did this and what if we took this to the next level? Could it be workable, sustainable? Who wants it? And the response has been pretty insane over the last 6 weeks.
Yeah,
Chris,
that's great information to know. I don't want to step on John's toes because I know he has questions. But I appreciate you sharing that with us, Randall. And, you know, I think I want to draw attention to something that you said when it relates to the company's final form. You used a different phrase, yeah. But final form, basically. This is a complex time right now because the legislation as it stands right now is get DJI out of the market. There's a lot of speculation that could be done about the reasoning behind that. Some say data security, others say economics. You know, there's a variety of things. We're not getting into that right this moment. But the point being, this legislation is going to change, whether it's who the target is, go from DJI to your Autels to, you know, your Axis Flyings to your Gep RCs, whoever. And Anzu Robotics, there are some components of this that you've mentioned that I think do leave it sort of somewhat vulnerable to maybe falling victim to legislation like that. For instance, being manufactured in Malaysia. Malaysia is not China, but it's still a country that, you know, if Western manufacturers, you know, decided to say, hey, there's a problem right there, and politicians got behind that, that could be problematic in the future. Has there been any thought, discussion, planning on that particular idea?
I would say the reason Malaysia is not victim to that is that you would have a significant amount of technologies that would now be precluded from restricted in the same way or challenged in the same way. Malaysia has done nothing wrong in trade relations with the U.S. These are long-standing relationships. That's the lack of tariffs between Malaysia and the United States is to encourage more trade between Malaysia and the United States. So just because there is some ethnic Chinese-ness of Malaysians or there is a common language, I think that would just bode to more racism than anything. However, starting in Malaysia doesn't mean that we can't finish in Mexico or the United States or somewhere else. Again, you're talking about future form stuff. Starting in Malaysia made a lot of sense for us as far as keeping labor costs to the point that we could keep the technology affordable, get it done quickly. And again, the tariff and other precedents that exist made it so that it was a logical choice. So if drone companies were like, well, we have to throw scrutiny at Malaysia as well, it would not be justified for anything going on in geopolitics. It would be something else.
Sure. And that makes sense. And just for everybody listening or watching this, we spoke with Randall offline before we started recording, and he made it very clear there are no questions that are off the table. He's happy to answer anything. And I want to make it clear to people listening and watching too, as John and I ask questions, me personally, as a drone enthusiast, I'm excited about the prospect of Anzu Robotics because the future looked bleak when it comes to some of these things that are happening to DJI and Chinese technology in the United States for guys like me. So I want this to work. I just want to make sure that everybody's, you know, knows what's going on and what the possibilities could be. So, John, you have anything to add there?
I agree with this. I mean, as a end you, you know, my whole precipice of being in the drone industry is all about the end users and the people that use them. And when it comes down to, you know, I mean, you go through the whole flow of this industry. And again, I've been around for 20 years of watching companies come and go, CEOs come and go, products come and go, ideas come and go. And so I don't want to bash on this idea and the concept of it and the hopefully what it will solve. But you know, at the end of the day, you know, we have a lot of end users that will be, you know, kind of putting their chips on the table here. And I do worry for them in the future if something were to happen, not necessarily in the Malaysia aspect, but, you know, it's a one-man show right now. I've read that in the New York Times. They called me specifically, Randall, about some questions on that. What are your concerns? What do you think? And I gave my two cents. And again, from the end user perspective, you know, when it comes down to purchasing, buying, data security is always the thing, but until it's kind of fictitious, so to speak, it's just a thing to talk about. It's not even, you know, what data we're talking about. Is it no data? Some data we've created already. Aloft has worked with DJI directly outside of the Anzu stuff. And you know, it's an SDK, it's built on an SDK, just like everybody else's stuff. So my question is, what does it really, you know, what does it really solve? Like, what does it really solve other than if DJI gets banned? Okay. So, you know, what are we trying to really solve on the long term? And that's kind of the general.
Okay. State, so general a few things. One is that you mentioned the New York Times article. I spent 6 hours with a journalist answering questions from one of the largest publications in the world. Like, when you talk about the questions that you ask and me saying ask anything, it's because if people are asking the same questions or not the hard questions or like not getting the information people actually want out there, these conversations are pointless. So, of course, I appreciate anything that is digging a little bit, a layer deeper. One thing that I will say that you both should understand as drone people and not the New York Times and not the average user is I'm a one-man show because I didn't have a product shipping. So why would I have after sales report support when there's no customers? Or why would I have sales and marketing people when I have a dealer network? Or why would I have a warehouse when I have a 3PL in Linden, which the photos that were taken of me were in our 3PL with our warehouse people? So it's not like it's Randall by himself in his basement building the drones and shipping the drones and servicing the drones. It's a lot of people getting paid a lot of money, but they're just not employees. Now that we've started shipping last week, of course, we're going to have our own internal support, but we're leveraging the reseller network, which you are very well aware of what they're capable of on the sales and marketing side. We have legal, outside legal support. So it's like me as a one-side show, a one-man show was very overstated in that New York Times article. It's true.
I agree with this. I mean, but again, this comes down to any product that we sell into the market. It doesn't matter.
Sure.
If you have a product, you sell it. You're going to sell it through distributors, sell it through those resellers, sell it online, sell it on Amazon. It doesn't matter. Once the end user gets it, if they have gone through the process to purchase, buy, and do their due diligence of trying to figure out if they want a green one or a gray one, once they get that, then it's the post stuff. And again, what happens if they crash? Who is the service people? You know, who are the people that are going to be, you know, troubleshooting the issues or problems with the Aloft app or the firmware or anything like that? Is it more the reseller network that's going to support this for you?
The people that are going to troubleshoot the Aloft, the people that are going to troubleshoot the Aloft app is Aloft. So when we look at the whole chain of building a company, R&D, currently DJI. Manufacturing, contract manufacturer in Malaysia. Software development, R&D, Aloft. Reseller network, sales and marketing, warehousing, other functions like that. 3PL. Sales and marketing is myself as well. I think that I brought a product to the people's eyes pretty quickly, and it's quite apparent, you know, that has worked out. So when we're talking about after sales, every drone that we sell has ANZU Care, which is a 1-year care program for incidental or accidental damages, as well as a manufacturer warranty, which is normal. We plan on hot swapping pretty much everything in the first year. That's why we put that there, is that we wouldn't have to source all the components, make sure we have pieces for every single repair that come through. We didn't know what that's going to look like. And so as a manufacturer, 10 years in, working for plenty of manufacturers, I have a good idea, and having data from the original manufacturer of this product, we kind of know what the failure rate is. We kind of know what the rate of submission for care programs in the drone space. So we're prepared to give people a world-class drone experience when it comes to after sales, even today, even with just Randall by himself, because someone says, I have an issue, I crashed my drone, they pay a deductible like they would with any care program, they get a new drone. If it comes to technical support, like if they get on a phone and call someone, I mean, we know all drone companies have their warts, especially when it comes to that, and it doesn't matter how long you've been around or how many employees you have, but we do have the reseller network that is the first line of defense for technical, like I have a question about how to do something within my drone. It just is very nice that this is a based off of a 2-year-old product that's quite mature, that there's a lot of users. So there's a lot of content out there that can help guide some of those technical issues. So I don't think that I or ANZU has been negligent to what it takes or what it means to be a drone manufacturer and serve the customer. I think that we have done things that make logical business sense. And thus far, we started shipping last week to dealers. They're receiving them. Maybe some end users are starting to see them. we have not, we've had zero complaints thus far. So until,
well, I mean, I've shipped a lot of DJI over the years to the tunes of millions and millions of dollars and thousands of units. And the failure rate of DJI is extremely low. I will give you that. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the returns, just because it doesn't work out of the box or falls out of the sky versus any other manufacturer, 110%. I would bet on that all day long. And the millions that they've made, not 10,000, not 5,000, they've made millions of products. So again, back to, yes, looking at that history of a manufacturer, how does, again, the disconnect really come into play if you're making every chip, every board, every everything out of a factory in Malaysia? If it's not made by DJI at all, like at all, then how do you create that in a factory that's just copying everything? I don't mean to be disrespectful, Randall, but it's a licensed copy of a product, apparently. And I say that as gentle as I can. But if it's made by an entirely different electronics manufacturer that has, you know, has to create all of that from ground zero, that's a question of like, how is that supposed to be any different than the non-DJI or anything else, you know? And that, it's a hard question, but it's still a question. Like, if it's not DJI, are we really going to have that kind of quality and that kind of, you know, flying if it's not DJI?
So I don't know. I mean, obviously you and I know that you had multiple years of service at Autel, but other than that, that would be the only manufacturer that you have worked with as an employee. I think that's a fair statement, right?
I've worked as far as being an employee, yes, 100%. But as far as being in factories and sitting at in Taiwan, also Malaysia, China, in these manufacturing areas, you know, their parts and pieces are sourced from all over the world. They're not just Chinese, and it's not just a specific anything. But there are sometimes, you know, Autel, you brought that up. They have a factory in Vietnam now, but still a high percentage of the products have to be manufactured in China because there's just no one outside of that space that sells it or creates it from scratch in Vietnam.
The point I was making about Autel is that Autel is maybe one of the few manufacturers, and maybe Parrot as well, that manufactures their drones in a way that is so heavily automated by machine that it has nothing. It's not really down to a person turning screws and checking torque and all that stuff. It's a machine. And so part of this licensing agreement is that we license the technology from DJI, but the contract manufacturer licenses machines from DJI to build these things. So it's pretty automated. And so we're pretty sure as it comes out the other end of the factory that the production is solid. Now, when we're talking about sources, I can say we don't source anything from DJI, meaning that when we have our suppliers, DJI is not a supplier so that they can't interrupt our supply chain. That was very important. So in a lot of cases, it's like, well, you have to go to this chip manufacturer, this motor manufacturer, these batteries, etc. But it is not up to DJI to say whether we can or can't build 1,000 more drones, right? So yes, there's a lot of common source. We did in 14 months, or realistically in like 8 months, as much as we could to try to pull more pieces out of China and find a separate source. In current ANZU form, we are a country of origin change, a country of ownership change, a software change. But in the future, it could be that we are a literal, like, we've went to next generation products and said, okay, here's a Chinese version. We need to find a outside of Chinese version of that component, or else we don't build it. That could be future form. So when you're saying, what does it solve? Today, the customers that have already bought ANZU products, it solved a peace of mind issue. It solved what their administration will let them buy today. I have not said to anyone, this is the end all be all, that I can guarantee legislation will impact this. I've been quite transparent of what this is and what this isn't. I would rather go to legislation that does not ban Chinese drones and we go back to sanity, but that's maybe not going to happen. So instead, I have an opportunity with the largest manufacturer in the world and a licensing agreement that lasts multiple years to redevelop that product and take a shot. And I would rather it be me than many people in the drone space. It's not about opportunism. It's not that I'm just a new to drone guy that is dropped in and trying to make the best decisions on behalf of the drone industry. I've listened for a long time and I have a good source, a good pool for feedback. And I'm hoping to build a drone company that I've tried to do before, which is a company that listens and cares and does what's right and hopefully elevates our ability to sustain a scale of drones available long term.
Sure. So Chris, and I'll just ask one more question. I know I've kind of taken the helm here. I apologize. So when it comes down to this American owned company, and I know that there's a lot of perception problems with this statement. And, you know, at one point or another, before you and I joined Autel, and I shared a recent post with this about articles that said that Autel was American made, American built, American people, blah, blah, blah. And we know that's simply just not true. However, with Anzu, I was curious how people have jumped behind this American made, owned, you know, whoever's financing it kind of concept. But I don't, you know, other than the path of the resellers maybe making a little money who are Americans, the end users who are using the equipment out there doing work with it, which are Americans, how does it really help with the production of, just before we really started, you know, there's no engineering being done by Americans. There's no, again, you just labeled it all out. There's no warehousing. There's no support people. There's no nothing that are Americans. And how does that kind of translate, you know, for, again, this is long-term questions to actually creating something from nothing that is not DJI, that this Malaysian, you know, whatever company can they make something and create it and kind of support the American engineering, American creation, American everything, since this is what it's kind of all about, you know, to some degree.
So first of all, everything outside of contract manufacturing and DJI's licensing agreement is American. 3PL's American, software's American, like they're all American folks that are being paid. Again, they're not Anzu employees, but imagine that they were. Imagine that all the Aloft guys were now Anzu guys, and imagine my 3PL was now Anzu warehouse. It wouldn't make a difference. It's American folks. But when you talk about the ownership, I've stated multiple times that the owners outside of myself are American citizens in the drone space, executives in the drone space that have their own businesses to run, and they don't want to be a part of the day-to-day question and answer of what Anzu Robotics is. Now, Kate, the reporter from New York Times, was scheduled to have a meeting with all of the ownership group of Anzu with their passports in hand, being like, here's who we are, and now you can validate this. But she said, what's in it for me?
Right.
At the end of the day, if I found something material I want to talk about and I've said that I won't talk about it, then that's a problem. And it would come down to an interpretation of what is material. And we had no problem with that. But she's just like, look, I don't want you to think I'm a bad guy because I found something interesting. What I told her and what I'll say here publicly is there is no one in the ownership group that has ties to DJI, has ever been a DJI employee other than myself, which that was ended in January 2017. No one's getting paid by DJI. No one has a spouse or cousin or family member of DJI. They're all American-born citizens. They are, if it matters, not ethnically Chinese. Like, there's nothing about the ownership group that would bother anyone. It's just their own choice to be private. And I think that that is normal. So then when you're talking about innovation, first of all, this licensing agreement, I dare someone else to try to do something like it. Like, it's, this has not been easy. Building a DJI product that's not DJI, building it in Malaysia, taking that software, turning the endpoints to AWS servers that are owned by Aloft, like it is discounted by how difficult that is, how difficult those negotiations were, and what this actually could be. Aloft is innovating on their app, building something that, you know, now with no geofencing, they're big on compliance with the FAA regulations on flight. And so they built stuff into their app for that. And for the photogrammetry aspects that are, they're not available in the SDK from DJI, we have to build that from scratch. So everything in 2 weeks that's going to be part of our app update is Aloft built, but it's through financing from us to put photogrammetry aspects within our app. That begins where there is a departure outside of just putting different data endpoints for capture and what's going on the drone. We're 6 weeks old. 6 weeks. Like, there's a lot.
Well, but you stated that there was a lot of time you've been working on it. So is it, you know, the first time I think anybody had ever seen the green machine was at AUVSI. So that's the first time it physically was in your hands and maybe showing a couple people. But, you know, this is a year and some making, apparently, in the time respect, right?
Conversation 14 months ago, but getting to a point where we understood it was going to be a licensing agreement was probably now I'd say 10 months ago. To get the entire sourcing, find a contract manufacturer, get all the componentry in place, determine pricing, determine the agreement. Like, there's a ton of stuff that has happened to write the app, to make it sure that those endpoints were all changed by Aloft so that we could then get a penetration test, which I'm not even trying to get into the definition of what a penetration test is. But if we are trying to say we changed all the endpoints and a third party went through and said all the endpoints were changed and we can't find any data going anywhere but where it's supposed to, that's what we did. And again, it's easy for anyone in the space to be like, oh, but you had 8 months. 8 months to do all of that is crazy amount of work that has been conducted. And we are now 6 weeks in from getting feedback, and we're already making motions to now divert from divert from what we launched 6 weeks ago to add photogrammetry aspects, to open up the SDK to third-party development so that we can have an ecosystem behind that. Like, these aren't trivial things that just happen. They are watched, and then we have to maintain that data security aspect of it. So everything has to be double and triple checked to make sure that our vulnerabilities are non-existent.
So Aloft won't be the only app developer on the Anzu hardware?
Correct. So we've mentioned that before, that there's a large photogrammetry company that's raised their hand to say, we'll be the first to develop on it. We basically said, look, you're going to be developing on an SDK that's going to look very, very familiar, but it's not the same. We've made some changes, so it's not going to be drop in your code and it's going to work. You're going to have to do some things, but we wanted a partner that would be patient with that process, as well as one that is very keen on data security as well, and added something that we needed, which is advanced photogrammetry capabilities beyond what we're already building ourselves, so that you could do obliques and facades and all sorts of different things. So that's going to be likely, let's say, mid-July that first SDK partner will come out, and then from there it will be an ecosystem.
Okay. All right. I'll shut up, Chris.
No more of that. You don't need John. Never shut up.
From my perspective, and again, I look at it from the end user and some of the many of the challenges that we've had, you know, me trying to help these end users out, you know, both with funding, technical support, the dealer having, you know, some of these dealers are good. Some of them suck balls and don't pay their bills. Sorry. You know, I mean, I'm hoping that for the end user, and since, again, Chris, I wanted to get your perspective as an end user, a possible person that would go out and do work with this aircraft, you know, what are the things that you're looking for? And I think, again, the droning company is a pilot, you know, a bunch of pilots, and they want to know that as well. You know, kind of what is it that we can expect if I ended up buying one of these versus, again, buying a DJI version, you know, what is the expectation with the current Aloft outputs? What are the, you know, so maybe a little bit of that insight on your side, Chris. I mean, I'm pretty much already asking Randall the question for you, but I'll quit talking. I swear to God.
You know, and I guess I'll just share my perspective and then allow Randall to sort of expand upon how Anzu is going to work to
help
accomplish
you
these things. But, you know, the thing that I look at from a private pilot's perspective, and again, I own my own sole proprietorship where I do aerial imaging services. So that's anything from photo and video, to low level mapping and modeling, even thermals, if I have access to that technology. Nothing super high level, just enough to get me by. But, the most important thing that I've found since especially getting into more of the data collection driven aerial imaging services is the flexibility and integratability across a variety of different apps. One of the cardinal sins that DJI, I believe, as an end user committed was at the inception of the Mavic 3, they removed that open SDK. So you could no longer integrate with Drone Deploy. You could no longer integrate it with Pix4D. And that's something that we had seen right along with the Phantom, with the Mavic 2, with the variety of other platforms they came out with. And I think that was sort of DJI drawing a line in the sand. We have our enterprise customers and we have our consumer customers. That's what they were saying when they decided to do that. But the fact is there's this gray area in the middle that I live in firmly right now, where, yeah, I am a guy that is on a consumer budget, but I need something to be able to get up to that higher level enterprise that will allow me to do some crossover work. So I guess from an end user's perspective, and the question that I'll ask you or rephrase that John already asked you is, how does that all work with integratability with a variety of different platforms? The SDK being open, you've said you've made changes to it. Is that something that Anzu is doing with the Raptor series? And is that something you plan on continuing to do throughout the life of the company?
For sure. So let me first say that in 2015, when DJI Enterprise was first born as a thought, DJI said, go find your own dealer network. You can't use the consumer network because that's how we're going to measure what is a consumer sale versus an enterprise sale. So I engaged folks like Firecam because they sold body cams to firefighters and police departments. And it's like, well, that must go to a firefighter or a police department. But all the sales of Best Buy could go to firefighters and police departments, or it could go to a consumer. And there's this measurement of data that was necessary for an enterprise drone to be born before an enterprise drone existed. Meaning I was selling Inspire 1s with a ZenMuse XT with John McBride back in 2016. How do you know that Inspire 1 was used for an enterprise use case? Because they bought a thermal camera. That's why. But a Phantom 4 at that time, how do you know a Phantom 4 was being used for surveying and mapping or for prosumer, wedding photography or just your own flights? You didn't know. And so we have benefited from the idea of a divergence of an enterprise line and a consumer line, not from an obsession of trying to find this data in an arbitrary way. Where we haven't benefited is that you would rather fly a Mavic 3 than a Mavic 3 Enterprise because it's cheaper and it still does the thing you want to do. The imagery is good enough, but you don't have integration, Drone Deploy, Pix4D, whatever. Mm-hmm. So there's annoyances for sure that exist as a manufacturer in the ability to control their own narrative, get their own data, keep their products as a value ladder so that there's a product down here that's serving a certain customer and there's a product up here that's serving a different customer and they don't want to confuse the two. That is big business. I'm small business. So what I do know is that I have exclusivity on DJI Enterprise products. So I've built the two easiest, most straightforward airframes that exist within that platform, within that collection of platforms. M30, M350 with payloads, super complicated, smaller addressable market, more expensive. So that therefore a Malaysian version or wherever it would get built would be additionally more expensive. But the question that comes across my table all the time is, well, why wouldn't you make a Mini, an Air, a Mavic 3 Manila? We don't have exclusivity on those products. So I think that part of the Anzu launch was impacted by the launch of Cogito, COGITO, which is a company I don't know anything about other than they're Hong Kong based and they make DJI variants of consumer products. Now, we have been approached too, like, can you do this? Would that solve an issue for folks that are showing up to their job site with a DJI product, where whoever that is, and they're like, can't use Chinese drones, can't use DJI. And then they show up with a green machine and they're like, no, you could use that. It's made in Malaysia, whatever. If that's who I'm solving for today, so that you could show up and do that job and make that money, I think that it's a good thing. Again, we need to evolve long-term to keep it so that it's not so basic. It's not just we built it in Malaysia, who cares? But we've done more beyond that. That is the intention where we plan to get to. But if we Anzu, made a smaller consumer-like drone like a Mavic 3. Could we put an SDK on it so that it could work with every with drone deploy, etc.? Sure, we could, but that would be building it from scratch because there's not a, an SDK that exists on that platform, right? So that's the kind of opportunity for innovation that exists to build something where something doesn't exist. Currently, we use things that already existed to get us to market faster, to make it so it's familiar, to make it so that we don't have to test our hand at how difficult is it to build an SDK, which is pretty difficult from my understanding.
It is.
Again, this is Anzu Robotics version 1.0 is just trying to solve these issues, trying to figure out what we could do to be better from a legislative standpoint, from an end user standpoint, and from a resolution long-term for the drone industry. I'm grateful to be in this position, to hear feedback, to be the guy that serves as the repository for a licensing agreement with the largest manufacturer. And I believe that the intention of everything is good. It maybe doesn't solve everything for everyone. It doesn't make John McBride say, I would tell every one of my end users to get this because no way in hell will they have a bad experience, or will they have this thing get legislated out in 6 months? Like, I get that. I know that. I can accept that. But there are folks that are buying these today because they're like, if I don't have you, I have nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's what we are here for today.
Yeah. Yeah. And this comes back to that whole, you know, again, American question is that, you know, if we are trying to get away from, you know, sourcing everything here in the US, trying to make all the chips, make all the lenses, make all the sensors, make all the motors, make all the batteries, make, which is nearly impossible to do. You know, I can definitely tell you that not even the best promoted showing off American manufacturers cannot source every component from here in the US, the continental US. They cannot. And so, you know, it's a fallacy that we keep talking about that this is going to somehow happen in the future, that we're going to be able to make drones here in the United States and never have to rely on anyone else. That's total utter BS. You know,
it's, I hate we're hearing
not there.
That,
but... We're just not there yet. You know,
yeah.
Could we be? Sure. But, you know, in order to kind of, again, back to your point, is solve this issue with helping, you know, Americans get jobs and helping people stay away from the DJI boogeyman, which is also complete nonsense, but you know, it is what it is. And we've got to be able to overcome, give opportunity to people. I hope that is what we're trying to, you know, do here with your company, Randall, and see those changes happen. And eventually, like I said, the, you know, only time will tell. I mean, there's nothing else that you can do. What else can you do except put aircraft out there, let people use it, try it out, see if they like the app or don't like the app that it currently comes with, develop better, make better, you know. But yeah, what is the future? What does it look like? We just kind of have to kind of hold tight right now and see what happens, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
And, no, Chris, go ahead.
No. Yeah. I was just going to say, I agree. You know, it's one of those deals where, and this is not necessarily something against Anzu. It's every manufacturer that's Western based or not named DJI or Autel, which have a proven track record in their own respects. But, anytime I hear this is going to replace, you know, the need for this or that or whatever, or fill that void that will be left based upon other extenuating circumstances, I look at it with a grain of skepticism because I've been told that over and over and over again, and it just hasn't come to fruition yet, which is why when I saw how Anzu is structured and the product that you're putting out, it was the first time that I sort of pulled some of that skepticism back and I thought, okay, let's see how it goes with a little bit more optimism. But, I agree with John. It's going to be a time will tell type of thing.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And it's a time will tell for me as well. Like, yeah. I do not know. I'm playing this complex game, right? And that's how I go into work every day is I like video games. I choose to put myself through that shit, right? So I'm like, this is just life as a game. Are you making the right moves? Are you moving the right pieces? Are you building the right relationships? Are you saying yes to the right stuff and no to the right stuff? Like, I have an opportunity to be brought something complex. Like, you're going to make DJI drones. Where? How? Like, what? How are you going to message this stuff? All of this is, it's on me, and I love that because I believe in myself to have the right intentions and actually care. But at the same time, I'm not the smartest guy. I'm not an engineer. I have a lot of faults. And so it's like, it's me. I get this opportunity, but I want help and I want support from what do we do with this opportunity? Because there's no one else that's going to get a DJI license and start making stuff. I believe there will be someone that gets an Autel license and starts making Autel stuff because someone should do that. And we'll see. We'll see who can not do it better. It's not about, like you said, filling a void. I wish that void wasn't there. Mm-hmm. But what I'm trying to do is say, if it is just about where it's manufactured, or if it's just about the DJI boogeyman, now it's me. Now I'm an American citizen. You can take me to court. You can sue me. You can lock me up if I'm lying. Like, if I'm mishandling your data, I have nowhere to hide. So let me stand in front of this and say, look, the intentions are there. I believe we're doing the right things. We have an incredible opportunity with the licensing stuff. What do we do with it? And I owe it to every customer that tries this out or every person that spends 10 minutes even thinking about it to give them all the information that is required to make good decisions on whether it's worth their time or not. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm genuinely trying to do.
Well, I don't want to do much of a wrap up. I'll let Chris do that. But there were some other questions. So if somebody's looking for the information, specifically our guys that are from Droning Company, what is the best spot, you know, website wise to find your information outside of a dealer who's got a whole bunch of marketing crap?
So AndrewRobotics.com is a site that I believe in because I built it basically. I think that our FAQ is very robust. If there's a question that you have about why we chose green, why the name Anzu, why do we manufacture in Malaysia, what is our licensing agreement, like, it's all there. It's not basic specs just thrown out in a sentence format. So check our FAQ. There's tons of content, tons of conversations just like this that we explore different things. Our blog is not a BS blog of nothing. It tackles data security. It tackles a licensing agreement. There's things that you can learn about us there. If you have questions specifically, Randall@AnzuRobotics.com. I respond to everyone that writes to me. Every single person is getting a response from me if you take the time to write. So if you have specific questions, I'm going to get in there with you and mix it up and try to get those answers. And it's an honor for anyone, like I said, to take 5 minutes of their time to see if this is worth their efforts. And if you have feedback, I'm all ears to hear that as well.
I do have a question before we do wrap it, and it's going to sort of spoil some of that FAQ page. Why green?
So back, let's say 7 months ago or so, we had the contract manufacturers like, look, okay, plastic moldings, this is what you can get. And it wasn't Home Depot where you have hues of everything. You had red, green, orange. Could have been crazy if I went orange. Could have really shaken things up. It's a joke. But yeah, it was just like, what about green? This green kind of looks all right. You don't see it on a drone. You just see green and you're like, okay, green. You assume it's going to be like a dusty, sexy army green. And then it shows up and you're like, Kermit the Frog green. Like, what is this green? And I've kind of said this before, but maybe not this verbosely, but there was kind of a, we might need to pause on this and send it back and say we need a different green. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about reproducing our first 400 units, changing the launch date from before Exponential to July. Like, there were things that were just practical decisions. We're like, look, it's a weird green, but I'm a weird guy. I'll just lean into it. It's going to be weird green. That's what it is. And if you don't like it because it's green, I don't have a customer. My bad. But it's been... it's been a topic for sure.
I'll say this though, the army green, it definitely would have been sexy, but there is a big problem with those like more muted colors. Yeah. If you crash it or you set it down in like an area that's a little more heavily trafficked with, you know, whatever, it's sometimes hard to find if you lose track of it. So maybe it is better that it is that bright, vibrant green.
Yeah, it's weird green, and you know, it was a decision that just was not. It wasn't like we selected that green and said, let's throw everyone for a loop and be like, what the hell? Like, or that I have like some wall in my house painted that color green. I'm like, oh, I've always loved that color. It was nothing like that. It was circumstances. Mm-hmm. And this goes back to what I was kind of saying to John earlier, which is like a lot of stuff has happened. That the decision on the color green was like a blip somewhere in that timeline where it's like, we have to make a decision. Green, cool. It shows up, we're like, all right, like, what do we do? Decision made, blip. That's it. We don't have time to like stay in this space. We have to stay in the space of what are we building? Who are we building it for? Is it going to work? Mm-hmm. And you know, that's 6 weeks in. This is where you see me now is I'm hoping it's working. 6 weeks in, I didn't think New York Times article. I didn't think Congresswoman Stefanik throwing out a quote to ensue beef. Like, I didn't think any of that was happening. I thought I was just going to like have some drone people be like,
you're right there. You know, like I said, I mean, the industry is right here at a cusp of what do we do next? You know, everybody, mm-hmm. nobody has any answers for that. And so, you know, the current investments, you know, here in Utah, where we're from, Randall, you know, we've had a lot of changes, legislation going on, and, you know, that's been going on, and we've got approximately 700 DJI units flying around in various degrees of whatever they're made here in just this state. And I hope that we're not stupid enough to just it all, you know, yeah. Like that's, you know, I just don't see that as a very, you know, a good solution at all. You know, I mean,
right.
There's just ways to overcome a lot of the data stuff, but you know, education is the biggest problem. One other final question for me is, you know, what's the cost of our units? You know, just something to put out there. And then what does it kind of come with? What is loaded on it? What is available on it? How many batteries does a person get? You know, I know all of these are there, but some of the users that might be watching this or some of our viewers may, you know, like need just a little bit of that information. So what are the costs of the two units and kind of what comes in the package when you get it?
Yep. So the Raptor, which is a non-thermal variant based off of the Mavic 3 Enterprise, is $5,099. Comes with a year of care standard, like I mentioned, so that we could handle all the incidental and accidental stuff without having to go into logs and determine cause of damage and issues, so that it would just reduce that turnaround time. We could keep those standards high. It just comes with one battery, comes with your charging cables, your controller, all of the things that allow it to function. We do have RTK module and loudspeaker available for both as far as an additional accessory, as well as a charging hub, which does the three batteries in parallel charging, like you've seen mm-hmm. with other products in the space. And then the thermal version is $7,699. Again, 640 by 512, high resolution thermal based off of Mavic 3 thermal. So we're talking about a $1,500 difference from the Mavic 3 Enterprise to the Raptor, and a $2,000 difference from the Mavic 3 Thermal to the Raptor T.
Got it.
Yeah. And then there's
when you open the controller, does it have a loft loaded on it?
So when you turn on the controller, it's a tab built-in device, right? The Aloft Air Control app is native on all the units. And so once you go into that, the user experience is going to be very, very similar to a DJI flight experience, but there's bookends before and after the flight where you can do things like airspace management, lands authorizations, things like that. You could also just bypass that. There's also pre-flight checklists that you can customize. So if you're like, hey, we go through these precautions before every single flight, you'll have that tracked as well as just available to anyone that's flying your drones. Once you go fly, it's based off an SDK. It's going to look familiar. It's going to feel familiar. The menus are all basically the same in the same place, etc. And then after flight, there's a post-flight checklist. Make sure that you have your SD card. Make sure that you've, you know, checked for damages. You've got all the data collected that you need, those sorts of things. But otherwise, it's a pretty similar flight experience. But that's all done on the Air Control app today.
Is all just going to be U.S. market right now? Do you have any insight on trying to do something in the U.K.? Yeah. I know they get a little weird in Europe about some of this security and stuff like that. Is that looking like the future?
So at launch, U.S. and Canada, we're serving today. I would say that we're probably a couple months away from serving several other challenged markets, one in Europe, one in Asia, one in Asia Pacific. You can guess what they are, but I haven't said that. But there's markets that are just like, look, we're having the same exact challenges, and this does serve our purpose. And this is feedback from those that are in those individual markets. So we'll approach those. When we got FCC certification, we got certification across the board, CE, Japanese certification, et cetera. So we're ready to go into those international markets. It was really like, we can build X amount of these. We need to funnel those into the market that we're like, stay focused and not divert all of our resources everywhere. But I think we're going to get there faster than we maybe anticipated.
Well, if you can make tens of thousands of drones like your counterpart, you know, if you will, there's a lot of people obviously that could use it. And like you said, you know, I think there's good possibility here. I still have a little technical questions. I am the technical guy. You know, I will be as soon as I get one in my hands and kind of do that and help possibly endorse and see what that is. But, you know, and how it would kind of work into the flow of these, you know, these people that are likely going to use it. But, you know, all I can do is wish you good luck, Randall, on the endeavor and, you know, make your changes, do what you can and see what happens. I mean, we'll just, like I said, the future is kind of unknown and hopefully that, you know, does what it's going to do in the future. So,
yeah. See. Well, John, I'll say this publicly. I should have a demo unit back in my hand sometime next week. Let me run one up to you. You could run it through its paces. You could at least have firsthand experience on the one-to-oneness, the reliability of what you're flying and the data capture. At least that would be helpful for me. It just, I mean, you and I go way back. It would be nice to hear your thoughts of what is and isn't reality from your perspective. So let's make that happen.
Yeah. Excellent. I'm not going to say no. And then Chris is probably going, man, where's mine?
Yeah. I'm sitting here and I'm thinking to myself, oh man,
we make things happen, Chris. I'm not afraid of Pennsylvania either. It's just John happens to be like a 45 minute drive away. So
we're going to have lunch together and fly drones. That's what we do.
Yeah. You know, I tell you what, I'll say, maybe I should just move to Utah. I don't know. But
I'm just saying.
It's not the worst idea.
Well, no. Yeah, I know. Man, you know, Pennsylvania's great too. But why don't you guys come here? That would be even better. Sure. All right. Well, anyway, I want to thank you, Randall. Randall Warnes again from ANSI Robotics for your time today. This has been a great conversation, enlightening. And I think that a lot of people, especially those watching on YouTube and listening on Spotify and Apple Podcasts right now, are very excited about the prospect of what ANSI could represent moving forward. So very happy to have your time. We'll have you on again, maybe once things have sort of evolved and developed, just to see where you're at with things. But really looking forward to the future and appreciate your time again today.
No, it's an honor. Appreciate you guys.
All right. Until next time.
Thanks again,
I'm Chris,
Randall.
Drone Geek. That's John McBride. That's Randall Warnes. We're out of here. See ya.